And we're back again, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Metal Brain Fart. I am your host, Bruce Thunderhead, and with me, as always, I have Daro Metal on the other side. How you doing, Daro?
Perfect, man. I'm on vacation. And I'm smoking my electric cigarette because I switched from normal cigarette to electric. And then enjoying some different flavor, and I'm drinking vodka with cocos flavor, so I'm pretty flavorish today.
Yeah, and we're recording this during in the early afternoon, so
of Tuesday, I think, or Monday. What the fuck is this today? Tuesday?
It is Tuesday today when we're recording.
Yes. Tuesday, 31st of May.
You know, it's always like the worst idea to ask me about the day because I probably have like the least, because you know I don't have a perception of days anymore because you know I don't have a real job at the moment. So for me, it's like, you know, it's weird. It's like people say, "Oh my God, it's the weekend. It's Friday. I look forward to Friday." I'm like, "Yeah, fuck." I have like Friday every day, basically. So,
I'm the same when I'm on vacation. I just totally lost what day is because most of the time I just becoming a pirate. You know, if you start drinking rum at 10 a.m., you are not alcoholist. You are a pirate. In this case, I'm with a vodka. And like I told you in the off recording when we start to chat a little bit before we record, I done an episode for my radio show and I recorded to 2 a.m. and basically I couldn't sleep very much. The last night I take mostly like half hour of sleep.
Damn. Yeah, well, I also had an. It's interesting that you said to 2 o'clock this morning because that was around the time when I went to bed because I actually stayed up and had some beers and I watched some live streams of whatever, you know, because that's all the interaction I get. I don't really have any friends here where I live, and you know I'm also moving out, so I don't really wanna, you know, put time and investment into, you know, new people here because, yeah, you know, I'll be fucking gone by. It's not a long time left, actually. It's
on 1 week.
Yeah. Tomorrow it's like exactly 1 week. So I'm going to have to like haul ass with my final with my final packing because I am going to do like this. I'm going to pack down all my recording equipment I have after this show that we're doing today, so
What? I thought we're going to record as well tomorrow and the day after tomorrow.
The thing is, I have to pack.
No, basically tomorrow, because the day after tomorrow it's Thursday, and I'm going to Muscle Rock.
Well, okay, all right. I'll pack it in after that then.
Yeah, because tomorrow we need to record as well something.
Yeah, well, then I'll just keep it. I thought that we were just going to do today, but yeah, whatever. Enough of this housekeeping bullshit. We have a very special episode today, as a matter of fact. Something that our friends on the other side of the pond probably have already done, or have they? Or, you know?
Yeah, they done it before almost a year ago.
So we're treading already explored ground, but I actually haven't listened to their particular episode on this subject. But
You know, everyone have a different opinion about the subject that we are speaking, and the subject that we are speaking is very flavorish, like my cigarette and my whiskey, and my vodka today. And we are speaking about Death, the band Death.
That's a description I've never heard being attributed to Death, a flavorish band, which I agree with. They are definitely a flavorish.
Yeah, because every album is totally different from the previous one.
Yeah, exactly. So, why are we doing this? We wanted to do a retrospective again because it's fun to do.
And also we have like two or three like phone call episodes. But man, don't get me wrong. I like this phone call episode. It's better than making a fucking list. And today we are speaking about the best album of 2001.
Yeah, exactly.
We are nerds.
But, I mean, this particular band, we actually... Because this is the thing when doing a retrospective, because we have different tastes, but we have, common ground on some things. I mean, obviously, we have Iron Maiden together, you and I. And, interestingly enough, this band, Death, we have in common, which people will probably think it's weird that a guy like me likes Death in a way, or maybe not. Maybe it isn't as strange as one would think, but
the more stranger thing is probably people think I love the first two or three album, but actually I like more the progressive stuff. I don't know why. It's strange.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. And this is what I would call the progressive metal that Death created is, you know, that is what progressive death metal really is. Because progressive doesn't mean like technical wankery, like fucking brain drill or something. Because there's a difference between technical death metal and progressive death metal. But I guess we can get into that when we get there, because we'll be getting there soon enough. But I think... it's better to go to the humble beginnings, maybe.
I just want to say, we're going to see how long it's going to take this episode. But I think we're gonna make it two-part.
Yeah,
first
definitely.
First four albums. And then the other three albums, plus we're going to speak a little bit of Control the Night.
Yeah, because it's hard to... I mean... It's a little bit of cheating, maybe, but I mean, I don't really think so, because I mean, Death sort of became Control Denied in the end there. I mean, basically the last, it's not a secret that The Sound of Perseverance was actually intended as a Control Denied album, but due to, you know, the usual label bullshit, they had to do it under the Death.
Yeah,
so... But we'll get there in the next episode. We can talk about that. But
are we gonna just start from the middle of nowhere and mention the movie that they released 2016, Dead by Metal?
I thought it was in 2018, but okay, yeah. As preparation, we both actually watched this documentary. Death by Metal, like you mentioned. very good documentary. I recommend everyone to check it out.
Yes. The thing was, we're supposed to record this episode Sunday, last Sunday. And I was a little bit lazy, a little bit sleepy, and I was like, okay, around, can we do a little bit late? So I take a nap till 4 and I was thinking I'm gonna watch the movie, because before that I never saw that movie. Because there is a ton of other death metal documentary, but not for the band Death. It's just this one. And I was thinking in the back of my head, okay, I'm gonna watch this movie, probably it's about 2 hours. So around 6-7, taking a... supper, and then we go and record. But then you have some other stuff to do, and the next day you send me a message. Hey, man, I highly recommend you the movie to check it. And I was like, yeah, I'm watching it now.
Yeah, that's sick. Well, I mean, it was kind of good because it was informative and it was very well made. I must say that. I mean, I don't know. Have we done heavy metal documentaries in the past? I don't know, but
yeah, I think it was very early in our podcast career, if we can say career.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, if I had seen this back then I would have called this like the one of the best documentaries ever. It's very well put together, you know, with all the. You know, they take some photos and images from, they collected a bunch of photos and stuff, old photos, and they edited in, you know, music and everything excellently. So it's, I would say it's on the level of the Rat Skates documentary, which I thought was the Born in the Basement one. That one was very good as well. Very good editing.
Yeah. And also the movie about Sodom that I mentioned even before, that is 8 hour, man. But so they have so much albums, and the thing is here, the movie with the documentary with Sodom, you have interview basically with all past member from that, and also with his sister, his mother. And not Jim Morrison. What was the guy who owned Morris Sound?
The name.
So it's very informative because they was. There, it's not like
they were talking to. Sorry for interjecting. Scott Burns was the man.
Yeah, Scott Burns
from
And it's not like me going around and start collecting some material from nowhere, like from the books or magazines. It's basically from everyone who was involved with the beginning of that till basically everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it leaves no stone unturned, really. So it's good. But I'm thinking here when I sit here and watch the, I look at the page on Metal Archives, and this fucking band basically like released 24 demo tapes before. They finally released their first album, and I think I haven't listened to any of them whatsoever.
I listened once, but not this early demos. It's this demo compilation that came out 2004, Zero Tolerance. Actually, I have Zero Tolerance, the Black CD, because there are two part. One is black and the other one is white. Zero Tolerance part 2 is white. But we're going to go a little bit out of order because this is 2004, but in this you have some instrumental that go for Control the Night, and also some very early demos for like Zombie Ritual and some other song from the early albums. That's why I mentioned now, not later on.
Yeah, it's basically just, they basically threw some shit together. This was after Chuck's death, spoiler alert, I guess. But I suppose everyone knows that he unfortunately died. But yeah, I mean, it's basically just, a thrown together cash grab. It feels like. I don't know if it is, but I mean.
I don't know if it's.
From what I've heard, at least from the earlier demos, because when they started out, you know, in or 83 basically, they were a very different kind of a beast. They were more doing something akin to this like more thrashier kind of a style that was popular in and around the time, like Venom and Celtic Frost, yeah, Bathory style.
Almost. Yeah, but just one question to you before we go there. Do you know how and basically why Chuck start to play guitar?
They probably mentioned it in a documentary, but I don't remember. But okay, do indulge me. I want to know why did he begin.
I just shoot in the top of my head. I didn't double check it again because I read a very long time ago. His brother passed away, and that was like his getaway from the depression. That's why.
Oh yeah, it says here on his page. Schuldiner started playing guitar at the age of 9. His 16-year-old brother had died, and his parents bought him a guitar, thinking it would help with his grief. And yeah, I mean, it makes sense in a way.
I mean, man, come on, this is such a tragedy for this family. Like, they have 2 sons and 1 daughter, and the both of the sons passed.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
sucks.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I mean, I'm not envious of his mother because, I mean, imagine. I mean, losing a son at 16, holy shit. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine. And Chuck, he wasn't too. How old was he when he passed? He must have been like around 40. He was 34. God damn, he was really. That's horrible.
Shit. I mean, I'm at his age basically.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, he's not too far off. Yes, 34. That's fucking insane. But yeah, we'll get to that when we'll get to that. So. But yeah, I don't know. There's not too much to say about the demos. They sound like shit because they were recorded in a way which I found very nostalgic because they recorded demos the same way I did with my first band, which was, you know, you placed a tape recorder outside of your rehearsal space, outside the door, and then put like a towel or something on top of it. And then you just pressed record and recorded like your rehearsal shit. Which is funny that Def did the same thing as we did, but I mean, I guess they were first on that regard. So these demos sound like pretty, I mean, they're okay for how they're done, but you know.
Yeah, the thing was, you forget to mention, he started as band Mantas. And yeah. And in the movie, I didn't know that, but when I saw the movie yesterday, he was basically paint a back of his vest with some crazy looking zombie or whatever, and like nowadays we have patches, but you know, back in the day it wasn't common to have a patch. And also a logo drawing up, say, Mantas and Flory the death, original death metal or whatever. I don't remember exactly the quote what was.
Yeah, that's... but that was like the rule of the times, you know. Like you said, there were like no patchers or... I mean, there wasn't really too much manufacturing as there is around today for these kinds of things. So, I mean, people had to do stuff themselves, you know. They had to sew on the patches that they've found and whatever. So, I mean, there was a little bit of a different time. but it was cool. I mean, that was a really good, you know, that patch painting or what you would say. That was really impressively done, you know, for someone...
Yeah, but even nowadays I can still see, and even I have on my old layer jacket, handmade paint of some art. For example, mine was with the satanic cross or a witch's key or whatever you want to say it, like most famous now is on the King Diamond logo, and also on the shoulders I have like Speed Metal logo. Mm-hmm. So we still keep this tradition alive. It's not only me, it's a lot of guys that I know.
And, yeah, definitely. But I think the things that have changed now is that, you know, now it's kind of hard to find someone who's really good at painting. I mean, I think it's easier to find a nice patch than it is to find a good artist who can, you know, draw something on your jacket or whatever. But I mean, there are people out there who does that, but you know, it's not easy to come by, and people who do it very well, they don't really, I at least haven't seen anyone trying to make a living like, I paint your jacket. I mean,
no.
Fuck, if I had the artistic know-it-all to do that, I would like be, okay, I can paint your jacket for like 500 or something. I don't know.
Actually, if I don't lie myself, there was, I don't know if it's still active, there was a couple or a girl from Bulgaria that make like these paint patches from, and I speak not just the logo from the band, like for example, Sepuku Frost, when Biskopat, he basically drew the patches. But I mean, with the artwork of the album, like I don't remember the album of Suicidal Angels, I think Bloodbath or something like this, where the angel is like taking a head and is like rising from blood or whatever. Anyway, and so that was the culture back in the 80s as well. Yeah. And
should like, we try to get like into the albums, maybe?
I'm going there, man. I'm going there. I'm just building. Yeah. And also, at that time, he recorded a couple of songs, I guess, with a name Mantas. And he started to jump on this bandwagon that is like tape trading. And when he received tapes, he basically received it as death. So that's how became. So that's how the name that stick, man.
Oh, really? It was as simple as that.
Yeah. The people just sent it to death. They didn't send it to Mantas. But also, you know, back in the 80s, a lot of the band started with different names.
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of reasons for changing names and stuff, I guess.
And we speak for an established band nowadays.
Yeah.
So, and after that, the crazy thing was he recorded one demo with the name Dead. I don't remember which of those 20-something demos he recorded. And he self-made it, you know, probably with a TDK cassette. And he had made it t-shirts. And he go to the local record store. I was like, hey man, can you just put it on there for sale? And after a couple of days, the record store called him, and he was like, oh shit, you don't want to deal with this anymore, right? No man, actually, all the tapes and the t-shirt is sold out just in a couple of days.
Yeah, it had a huge pull. They had a huge pull, those, but I can imagine, because you know there was probably not a lot around that sounded just like that. And I mean, of course there were. I mean,
possessed.
I mean, they were possessed, of course, and then we have Sepultura as well. Kind of did similar things, but they were a little bit more obscure, I would say.
Yeah, because they were in Brazil, and I'm not sure if they start. Yeah, they start around that time.
Yeah, they were well. In and around the same time, because I know these discussions, because there's always like a fucking discussion of online, you know, band, first band of genre, and it always ends with like a fist fight.
Or like yeah, and the most... and the most is between the huge rumble is between Possessed and Dead, but also yeah. You can in that case you can also put Onslaught, because in their first album or demos even they have a song Death Metal.
Yeah, I mean the discussion could like spiral, and it always does when you talk about this thing, but I will claim, however, that when Def finally released their first album, Scream Bloody Gore, I think that is that defines the, you know, the genre, I think, in a way.
I still think it was a brutal trash like Possessed, Seven Churches, but also don't forget that they started as a Californian band. Because at that time, Chuck lived in California.
Oh, yeah, they were doing that bullshit as well. Yeah, but that's kind of interesting because Florida was not really, back in those days, it wasn't as famous for music as it later became. And I think it really was thanks to Chuck because he didn't... I think this happened a little bit later, but he like... went back to visit his parents in Florida one time. And then basically the guys in the band stayed in fucking California and they were calling him like, hey, dude, are you coming back or whatever? And he's like, nah, I like Florida. I'll stay in Orlando. So they were like, okay.
Yeah,
the beginning of his... I mean, Chuck Schuldiner had a little bit of a... interesting behavior.
He was very strange person. Very nice, but also very difficult one.
He was probably, you know, after watching the documentary, you sort of get like a, you know, you don't get like a full picture, but you get an idea from people's stories and whatever. And
he was like almost like Axl Rose. This type of behavior when you watch the movie.
You know, I've worked with people like that. You know, because this is the interesting thing when you've been in bands for many years, and there are personality traits which can be in bands, and he definitely had one very familiar trait I've seen in a lot of people in many many band constellations. So. Yeah, but fuck, we're talking about everything but the thing we're supposed to talk about, I noticed, but I guess that's...
Hey, come on, man, don't forget we are brain farts, so
it's normal. That's true, I mean, structure is not our thing. But I kind of want to get into... Is there something else you want to add? Because I feel like I want to get into the meat and potatoes of... you know, the album.
Yeah, I think the both of us have a little bit of ADHD, so it's normal to jump from the rail and not stick to a topic. So,
yeah.
However, but in 87, they release Scream Bloody Gore that we mentioned, and like I say, for me, it was still a little bit of this brutal trash as Possessed and Sepultura, if you want to say it.
There's definitely truth to what you're saying, but I think there's like a 50-50 kind of thing, because there are parts that do sound like, you know, sort of like the black and fresh of the day, but there's something else in it. And I think... like Infernal Death, the first track of the album. I think it has, I mean, the opening riff to it, it doesn't sound fresh to me. I think that is what I would say, like a death metal thing going on there. But I don't know. I mean, you're the thrash expert, so you probably
yeah, man. But but you know, this is how the genres evolve from one type to another. For example, Venom, they don't start as a black metal band, and I still till today don't consider them as a black metal band.
No,
I consider them as a speed thrash, but because of the black metal album that they released and also the theme of the lyrics, they became what know as a first wave of black metal. And that's how the death evolved from brutal thrash to death metal.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of death metal bands that wouldn't be around, I think, if it weren't for, you know, what death put out, I think, because this is basically the seed of which a great oak sort of grew up, I would say. That is how I view Scream Bloody Gore, at least. And that's why I'm not really too impressed with it. I remember I got this album, I bought it when I was a teenager, and back then I was like, I liked Slayer, so my taste buds were not really too evolved at that point. I really liked the, you know, the raw sound and like the basic death metal lyrical shit that was going on this album. But
Sorry, I disturb you. Because you said you like Slayer back in the days, that in like Scream Bloody Gore and etc. Do you know what is strange? We totally swap our taste of music. Cause back in the days, yeah, I like a little bit trash, but I was more into heavy metal and power metal, and now it's totally opposite.
I mean, okay, I'm not gonna dismiss my younger self. There was probably nothing wrong with my taste, but I had a different kind of a palate back then. I mean, it's sort of like with food, you know, when you're a kid, you don't eat certain kinds of food, but when you get older, you know, you eat other things and, you know, you start to hate some things as well.
Yeah, man, like when I was a kid, I totally hated mushrooms, but today I like mushrooms and I love it.
And the way I feel about this album, I sort of feel like I'm an excavator, you know, at a dig site, digging for dinosaurs, in a way. When I listen to this album again, I'm sort of like, oh, I see here that this is something ancient, and I definitely see the good parts in it. But overall, it's like, it's not really... It's hard to say. I'm not saying that this is a bad album, but it's like... It's sort of immature in a way. There are good shit in on this, but there's like ways to go, I feel.
Yeah, but I mean, he was around 18 back in the days. And let's get real, nobody done this. Or if someone do that, there was a few of band. It wasn't like the whole genre. So basically, like we said earlier, he and Possessed was one of the godfather of this type of music. Like back in the days, Celtic Frost, or not Celtic Frost, Hellhammer, Venom and Battery for the extreme genre. So he also put this and what's going to be more extreme than Slayer back in the days, Slayer and Creator, what's going to be more extreme? It's going to be more faster, more brutal lyrics and etc, etc, etc. So that's how from thrash you got brutal thrash and then you got to death metal.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But I don't really have too much to say. I mean, it's like baby steps. This album, it is good on its own. There are fantastic songs on it, like I mentioned, Infernal Death, that's a good one. Somber Ritual is, of course, like, I mean, it's a classic. And I remember that's like one of the songs. It was sort of like a standard song you would play in a couple of bands. I remember actually practicing that song with one band that I was in. It's a very easy song to play, and it's very fun. So I guess that's why it's sort of like a rehearsal space favorite in a way.
But not only that, man. What I'm thinking till you speak right now is like, even if that sounds so gory-ish and almost like black metal. I mean, the type of recording, you know, because he's obviously recording his crappy studio and whatever. They still have some melodies inside.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck's sensibilities are definitely there. But, you know, there are some melody to it, but I mean, I think it's we'll see it more in the future, I think, of the
career. But still, from the beginning, they have a little bit of melodies that after that evolve to this progressive death, and after that progressive project does Control the Night.
Yeah, I mean, there are things there, definitely. There are. I'm not going to deny that, but they weren't there. But, you know, all of the criticisms I have for Scream Bloody Gore, I mean, are basically swept away with Leprosy. But I don't know, are we finished with, do you have something more to add about Scream Bloody Gore?
To remind you, for Scream Bloody Gore, that wasn't like, first of all, wasn't established band, and also there was just two members. It was Chuck Schuldiner that do all the strings, instrumental and the vocals, and also Chris Rayford, sorry if I butchered the name, who was on the drum. They was just two member, like Dark Throne, for example, there are two members as well.
Yeah, it was basically like a project at this point. It was not a band in any... I mean, it would... That is the thing with, you know, the history of death, because they're sort of like a... I mean, the lineup is... Oh, my God. It's all over the fucking place, man.
The lineup is almost like Megadeth, Wasp, and all that band. Basically, it's a one-man-operated band.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's a project which hires, people that can play either on the album or on the tour. That's basically how it is. There are people that have been in the band that haven't recorded a single note with Def, and there are people that have only recorded stuff with Def and never, like, toured. So it's insane. But yeah, that is basically, you know, the red thread, as it were, with this band, because it's basically just Chuck's thing.
Yeah, and a couple of 2 or 3 months after my birthday, they released Leprosy.
Yeah, and that one, you know, all the criticisms I had about Scream Bloody Gore, about it being sort of infantile and dinosaur approach to music. Not true about this one. Leprosy is fucking great. If not one of the best albums they've ever made, in my personal opinion, at least. But
like I said, that's the strange thing about that. You probably like more the earlier stuff. I don't know. And I listen more to newer stuff.
That is not true. But you know, I'm just saying that it's sort of like choosing a favorite Maiden record. It's sort of all over the place.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like death metal, as it were, because I think this is Leprosy is a pure death metal records with a bunch of interesting influences, but I mean, I still think it's a pretty solid death metal release. Unlike, I mean, the thrash metal that was on Scream Bloody Gore, I don't hear it at all. Maybe there's a little of it. I guess, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, doesn't matter what you are doing, if you are doing black metal, not grindcore, but black metal or death metal, there is always some thrash influences. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, of course. I mean, nothing is created in a vacuum. So, but I think Rick Ross played on this album, and he actually co-wrote some songs together with Chuck. So there might have been a thing there, because Rick Ross is an extremely talented musician and had a, I think it helped to create the sound on this record. I think, at least. Even though, I mean, Chuck is don't really need any help to make music, because he's so good at making it.
He was very talented, and but Rick almost was from the beginning, because. Yeah, he was as Mantas. The thing was, he was at LA, and for this album, he flew to Florida.
Yeah, so he was kind of in and out of death.
He was in the beginning, as they started as Mantas.
And then Chuck started to fuck around, and... yeah, so I see here, he was in death from 84 to 85, and then again 87 to 89. So it's a very messy kind of a thing.
Basically, he was from 83, as Mantas, I told you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you put that in as well. It's kind of a messy thing, but...
And let's check the songs. First is Leprosy, obviously classic one.
Very good.
Born Dead, Forgotten Pass, Left to Die, also really good song. My favorite from this album is Pull the Plug. After that is Open Casket, Primitive Ways, and Choke on It. Basically, like I said, for me, Pull the Plug is best song of the album, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm a little bit boring, I guess, because I actually like Leprosy the best, and that song, that's very interesting, because that sort of that really has a little bit of a nugget of what would come in the future. I feel. I mean, about the songwriting and things, it feels like, this was the first of the more progressive kind of a thing they did. And this was actually one of the tracks that Chuck wrote himself. So,
yeah, but I think the progressive stuff going after 91. But the funny thing is,
There are hints of it, especially on Leprosy. I that's just, how I feel.
Like I said, I didn't listen to this album for a very long time. I just check it when we say we're going to do that episode. I played like once when I was at work, so I couldn't keep a very big attention on this album or the early ones, and I don't remember if it was for this album or for the upcoming, when they supposed to go on the tour with Creator, and basically Chuck said after that Chuck say fuck it, I'm not going, or whatever.
Yeah, that was I think it was the Leprosy tour, because they got like this. They were basically asked to play in Europe, and all of the other guys were very enthused. And I think Chuck was, to a beginning, he was pretty enthusiastic, but then he sort of changed his mind.
Yeah, no, he was there, but it wasn't for Creator, it was for them and some other band, I don't remember, and they made like two weeks, I think, from tour, and they say, and Czech say, no, man, I'm homesick and I'm going home. That's the thing with Czech. He was very all over the place, but most he stick to his family, and he was very easy homesick. He miss his cats, his family, and whatever.
Yeah, and they this was a bit later, but in the 90s they were going to tour tour in Europe, but he actually signed a contract saying that I don't want to have anything to do with this tour. So they actually for that tour, I don't remember if it was before Spiritual Healing or if it was the Spiritual Healing tour, but they took in a vocalist and a guitarist during that tour. Yes, because
from Cynic.
Yeah, exactly. It was let me see here. It was Louis Carrizales, who was in not Cynic. He was in Death Tripper, Indignation, Rotting Corpse, Devastation.
I think it was also Cynic. Basically, Death and Cynic is like brother band.
Yeah, they were friends with one another and would hang out and shit in the early days. Right.
I just want to see something. You can continue rumble something, man.
Yeah, well, I guess we're a little bit in the future here, but I think it's almost time to... Yeah, it is time to take like a first break. We've talked about the first two records. I think it's a good place to take a break. So
Because we are speaking of that, we are not going to play any music this break. So
yes, we are.
We are?
Yeah, I got some music from the band Nightlight, which have made an excellent synthwave cover of the entire Symbolic album. So we're going to put a track from there. I haven't decided which, but I'll put something nice. And we're back again. And that was Nightlight doing a synthwave cover of the entire Symbolic album. It's a very interesting release, I would say. And I hope that they'll try to do the other albums as well. It would be really cool to hear individual thought patterns, or human maybe. But yeah, we're back again. And we're talking about death.
Yeah.
And we left off at leprosy, and we talked a little bit about Chuck Schuldiner's fear of the European tour. Or it's not...
not only fear, but his behavior and whatever. And it wasn't just the European tour. It was basically all over the place. Even in US, he have this type of behavior.
Yeah, the understanding that I got from the documentary was that, you know, it seems like Def was a hard band to follow on stage, in a way.
Because that's why I that's why I made this comparison with Guns N' Roses, because everyone know the behavior of Axl Rose, like never show up or cutting the shows and whatever. But with that was basically, yeah, we are on tour. No, we are not on tour. You never know.
Yeah, there must have been and I think that might have been the reason, because, you know, Def is sort of like, they're kind of a forgotten band in many ways, because they're not really remembered as, you know, the other giants, I would say. But I mean, that could be many. I mean, it could be, I don't know if it's because their sound changed so much, or that they were hard to deal with tours and whatever, or I don't know if it's if any of those factors could have played into it, but I do feel that Def is a little bit of a underrated band, as a matter of fact.
I think it's not underrated band, but it's a band that everybody, or most of the metalheads, like, but it's the band that is not so much spoken about, like open discussion, but almost everyone like. And the funny thing is, for me personally, when I heard it for the first time, I was like, that's crap. That sucks, man.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't remember exactly. I was, and I speak back in the days when we didn't have a Facebook, we have IRC and whatever. And
oh, damn, that's really old school.
Yeah, well, it's not old school, but old school for our generation, that is around 30 something. And someone said, hey man, check this one, and send me that together as one that is a little bit late that. And I was like, that sounds good. So from that point, it's clicked to me. But before that, because I was watch this Dynamo gig, I think it was Spirit Crusher, and I was like, that sucks. And nowadays, this song is one of my favorite. But that was the case with the Sodom, and I don't want to tell you how many years I fucking hated King Diamond. I really hated, couldn't stand King Diamond.
I must say that I didn't. I was actually one of the few that didn't hate King Diamond when I first heard it. I thought that lyrical style was cool, actually, as a matter of fact. I was one of the few.
I speak about the voice.
The what?
The voice.
The voice. Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. I actually didn't have a problem with the voice, actually, when I heard King Diamond the first time. I think it sort of fitted, you know, because it was spooky music about spooky things, and he sounded like a ghost. You know, it made sense to me, but everyone else that heard that would like laugh or be like, turn that shit off, basically.
I hate it almost as I hate Nirvana.
Nirvana?
Nirvana is a Swedish death metal band.
Nirvana 2000s, yeah.
Yeah. Nirvana is this Seattle crap.
Yeah. Well, that's but I think death has a lot of common with King Diamond in that way, that I think it's an acquired taste. You have to listen to it a little bit more than you have to with other things in order to understand it, I guess.
Yeah, but let's go back into 90.
Yes, and it's kind of perfect that we talk about it in a way, because Spiritual Healing, that was a little bit of a departure, kind of, sort of, was it?
Not so much. I mean, it was a departure for the band members, but
not of for course, the music. That goes without saying, sorry.
But not so much for the music style. And one thing that I want to throw right now is I think Chris from Metal Hangover say they have awful covers. I'm totally disagree with this.
I do too. I actually very much like this cover of Spiritual Healing.
The thing with that I want to say is for almost all the covers that release all the albums, I think Scream Bloody Gore was the only that you can say if you are a metalhead after like the created death metal genre, Scream Bloody Gore is basically screaming death metal. Because if you see Spiritual Healing or Leprosy, you're gonna think about thrash metal band.
Yeah, it is
a sort of Ed Repka or Ed Repka.
Yeah, it was it wasn't like Ed Repka. It was him who did them. So. Yeah, but I really like it, and I think the album cover perfectly shows one difference with the band, of course, because they sort of gone from these brutal descriptions of death and violence, which is, you know, a staple for death metal, and become a little bit more social in their lyric and spiritual in a way, funnily enough. And I think this is where, I mean, already on Leprosy, there was some really great lyrical stuff. But here, I think the lyrics come to a totally different level. And I mean, the first song, Living Monstrosity, is about like crack babies, basically. Which is, I mean, is kind of an insane thing to take up. You know, it's a very, very heavy subject. Which makes sense for a band like Death.
Yeah, and even you can see it on the movie. Check, I cannot quote exactly, but it was something with, why we need to write about some satanic or zombie bullshit anymore? Look at the world around us. It's way more horrifying than writing a lyric about some zombie or Satan came to conquer the world.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree with his assessment, because I mean, there was a change in death metal, and I think Chuck was part of it in a way, because, you know, this thing about, you know, writing about this, like the standard thing, like demons and Satan and whatever, that was becoming kind of stale.
Yeah.
Kind of obvious in a way.
And the other thing is, it's not only that, I even spoke with Onslaught, because I mentioned it even before, I'm a friend with them. And when they release I think Sounds of Violence, there wasn't so much lyric about Antichrist, hating God and whatever. There was more war theme in a kind. And I was like, hey, you don't have this time like, for example, killing peas when they start spitting blood in the face of God and whatever Antichrist song or demon worship. And they say, hey, man, did you see the world around us?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I don't remember who actually said that on the movie. Even their brutal death, not brutal death, like, but even their brutal music, they still have these hooks on the chorus or on the music. Yeah. That you can hear it and you can remember it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not noise in any regard. It's very, it has a lot of melody and interesting structures. And that's what I really like about Spiritual Healing is one of the few records that I haven't listened too much to, unfortunately.
Actually, I don't know why I always misplaced Spiritual Healing and Leprosy. I always fall. I know it's the third album, but I always put it as the second one.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't know, man. And but like I said, Early Death is not my thing so much. That's strange because I like brutal music, and that definitely is the type of brutalness that I like, but I prefer more latest death.
Yeah,
and to be honest, I listened probably 100 times this album till today. I cannot recall any of the song from the album.
Spiritual Healing, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a... There's definitely some kind of problem. I feel that they are... And this is a problem that will reoccur in the future as well, is that the song structures are very progressive. There are so many riffs and melodies that you sort of forget about them in a weird way. They're excellently put together songs, but there's so much shit happening that, I mean, you know something happened, but you don't know what. Do you get what I mean, in a way?
Yeah,
and you know what you heard, but you can't process it. That's probably...
Yeah, and also have a really good lineup this time. James Murphy and Terry Butler and Bill Anders.
Yeah, Terry Butler actually played on this one, unlike the Murphy previous record.
I think I'm not sure if it was about this one or just give me a second. Where the fuck was... I just want to double check something.
Yep.
I don't remember for which album Terry Butler supposed to do the recording, and when they go in the studio, he was like having not a stroke, but like he was totally not unprepared. I don't know how to say this.
He was nervous, and the album
totally, yeah,
in question was Leprosy. He got credit for doing the bass on it, but he didn't do it. It was Chuck that played all the bass on Leprosy.
He was like, hey man, I cannot do it. It's my first time on the studio or something like this. I cannot do it. I can't play live. Can you record it? And he was like, yeah, I record all the instrumental, basically all the instrumental at Scream Body Gore except the drums. So,
Sure. So it wasn't a problem for him. But he actually played on this one, and he's a good bass player, I would say. And he actually helped out with the songwriting. I'm pretty amazed that Chuck allowed a lot of help from the other guys on these albums, but he did. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't think I have anything more to say about Spiritual Healing. I think it's a good record, but the thing is, it's not very memorable.
In my opinion, I think it's less memorable. Like I say, I cannot recall any of the songs, even Spiritual Healing. And I listened to this album a thousand of times, but nope, I cannot say which one is which one.
Nah, and I agree. I absolutely agree, and which is unfortunate because I like what I hear, but it's really a weird situation, you know.
Yeah, because in every other album, I have at least one song. Ah, yeah, this song was from this album. Yeah, I know that song, at least one.
Yeah, and that's the same for me as well. But I think there are some other albums as well which I have this problem. But we'll get into it when we'll get into it, I guess. Do we have anything more to add about Spiritual Healing, or should we go along with the next one?
I think it's time to see the biggest progress.
Yeah, the biggest progress, definitely. So, Human.
91, October 22nd.
It was a very short while afterwards, just 1 year, roughly, yeah, between these records.
Because before that, it took almost like every second year they release album?
Yeah, it was a little bit like that, and probably because of Shock's... Maybe it was him, maybe it was, I don't know, scheduling bullshit, I don't know. But yeah, it just 1 year later. And it's very interesting because it's almost, they made so much progress over that year. It's amazing. And I think it's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's because, again, lineup change.
And this lineup change was... extremely extremely different, because the musicians in question here are fucking amazing, particularly the rhythm section here. We have Sean Reinert on the drums, rest in peace, he died 2 years ago. And yeah, one of my all-time favorite bass players, Steve DiGiorgio.
He's not only for you, man, he's a fucking machine.
He is fucking amazing. I love listening to this guy. And what's special about Steve DiGiorgio is that he plays on a fretless bass, which, for those of you who don't know, it's a bass without frets. And what's the difference?
For the people who don't have any musical idea what we are talking about, that's this metal thing that is on the the neck,
yeah,
that
exactly.
You put your fingers on or whatever between.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can explain more about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, it just sounds different than a regular bass. That's really it. And if you listen to the Human album, you can definitely hear that bass going crazy. It sound you hear like the one thing that is like that you know when Steve is on the bass, you know, you hear this boing boing in the background, and then you know that's Steve going crazy on his fretless bass in the background. But one interesting thing that I didn't know until I started researching is that actually their live bass player, Scott Carino, that would play on the coming tours that they would do, actually played on Cosmic Sea on this album, the instrumental. So Steve DiGiorgio did all the bass for all the other songs, but on the seventh track, Cosmic Sea, It was Scott Carino, and I didn't actually know that until, you know, fairly recently.
Yeah, and even they didn't say it on the documentary, because I remember, this song basically they recorded as almost like Escape, basically in the studio.
Yeah.
This is probably the most progressive album till now. Now we are start to speaking about progressive death metal.
Yeah, definitely. This is really the modern death as would be known, basically. This was the game changer, I would say. And I must say, like, this was actually my first introduction to this type of music, was the Human album, as a matter of fact.
Like I mentioned earlier, the song Together as One was for me.
That was your first one. That's cool.
I hear Spirit Crusher.
Yeah,
I told you before, and I didn't like it. But Together as One was the first song that clicked for me.
Yeah, that's an excellent track. The first one for me was, I found a video of Lack of Comprehension on YouTube. That was my introduction to death. And
that was their first video that also sort of skyrocketed their career as well, because back in the days, MTV, when they used to play music videos.
Those were the times.
So it was very important for all that, because if that was familiar for a couple of thousand people, now it's a band that know a couple of million people.
Yeah, they really made a mark there. And I mean, I think Lack of Comprehension, that was an interesting first track to, because I basically haven't, you know, at this point, I haven't really heard any death metal. So this song, I mean, it begins with sort of like this clean acoustic thing, very atmospheric, and then it just fucking kicks up. And I remember, like, listening to this, I must have been like 12 years old or something. I was like fucking amazed, you know, my fucking jaw was on the floor. I was like, what the fuck is this? What are these vocals? What are these riffs? I was like, it was insane, you know.
I forget to mention before, like I said, I didn't like that to this point, and that's probably around, should we say, early 2000. Yeah. But around 98, 99, I was listening to death metal.
Okay.
I was listening to Cannibal Corpse. That was my first introduction, and I was like 8 year old, so it's supposed to be around 98. And I don't know why I didn't like that till early 2000 or mid 2000, like 2005, something like this.
Yeah,
it's very strange, man.
I mean, I think it could be that, I mean, they're a little bit of an odd band, you know, and especially this, like, this was my introduction to, like, the entire death metal genre, was this album, which is, it doesn't really do the genre justice, because this is, I mean, this is definitely, there's death metal in the music, but it's more of a progressive album.
Yeah, like we said, that's like the beginning of the end. When I say the beginning of the end, it's like they start to push the envelope more through prog metal than to death metal.
Yeah, definitely.
And even I think later on, Chuck said, yeah, I cannot do anything because the name that stick to the band, I don't want to do that, but we're gonna speak about that on the next episode.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know. I don't have too much to say about this album, except it was the first one, and I really like how it fucking sounds. The drums are fucking insane, I must say. We really need to mention it, because, you know, the fucking double pedal beats in Flattening of Emotions that sort of fades in from the silence. That's crazy. I mean, it sounds fucking insane, this album. Mm. It's incredible how fast he fucking it's sort of like inhumanly fast, it almost sounds like, I feel.
Here is one more other progression for me. Before that, I like from each album except Spiritual Healing, because, like I said, I cannot recall any song of Spiritual Healing. Doesn't matter how many times I listen to. Here probably have the most songs that I like to this moment.
Yeah, and
it's like
they're memorable. All these yeah, tracks are memorable. They are.
For me, not all, but Suicide Machine, Together's One, Lack of Comprehension, and Cosmic Seaman, four song from eight. It's basically half of the album. Ah, yeah, that's from that that song. I know it's great.
Yeah, I agree. Not all songs are that memorable, but it's more than more than Spiritual Healing, at least that I would agree with. So, yeah, it is a great one, and it's surprisingly short as well, 34 minutes.
Yeah, and when you listen it, you feel the song long in a kind, but after that is what the fuck? It's already finished?
Yeah, it's
I
over
want to hear
so
more. Yeah, but you hear the song and it's like, for example, Together's One is only like 4 minutes, but when you listen, it's feel like 8 minutes. And when I say that, I don't mean in the bad case, because there is a song that is like 2 minutes and you feel bored after 40 seconds and you feel like 10 minute song. Here is like 4 minutes and 9 seconds, but you feel it like 8 minute time traveling.
Yeah,
but it's short.
I totally agree. And Cosmic Sea feels like a long epic as well, but that's only like 4.5 minutes as well. So
yeah, and you're very surprised how you feel so long, and when you hear chink from the tape, because let's get real, I started to listen mostly on the tape. The tape is finished, you need to change. What the fuck? It's just 20 minutes already passed. I feel like I'm there for 1 hour, man. But it's like 20 minutes. And like I said, it's not in a better way feeling along, it's on the good way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's very, very few band can do that. And especially with that they still keep this brutality, but also put so much melodic and progression on this album. It's unique, man. It's great, and I cannot say anything more about that.
No, I think you put the nail on the head there, really, because there's nothing. I mean, they didn't do anything like this before or really after. I mean, they sort of tried to do the same thing again, but I think this this is very special for me. I mean, I guess it's just favoritism I'm displaying here because it was my first record I ever purchased of this band. So I guess that's why.
And here is something that people gonna probably make a mop and try to lynch me.
Oh, controversy.
Yeah. Till this day, I always think to buy something from that, like, doesn't matter, cassette, CD, vinyl. I still don't own nothing from that except this Chuck Schuldiner compilation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, that's not a huge problem. I only, like, own... Like, I only have three records. I only have Scream Bloody Gore, Leprosy, and Human. That's all I own. And
yeah, but it's strange for people who like this band to not own anything.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't think so anymore. I mean, especially not now in the digital era. But I remember collecting... Yeah, but collecting these records were a pain in the fucking ass because I tried to get everything in order, but I had to I bought Human first and then I tried, you know, going backwards in order. But the thing was, I gave up after Spiritual Healing because that fucking CD was out of print and they wanted like a ridiculous, you know, like import price on it. You had to import it from fucking America and it was like, I mean, 200 crowns or something, like 20 bucks, you know, it was like insane.
Even nowadays, 200 crowns is pretty, yeah, it's a little bit expensive, but pretty decent price, I can say. But there is the problem, fucking shipping, man.
Yeah, and it would take like a whole while. And I just basically just said, fuck it. And then I didn't bother because I had, you know, three good records I liked anyway. I never even found, I think I saw individual thought patterns at Sound Pollution in Stockholm. But I didn't buy it because they were asking for like a ridiculous, it was like 189 crowns. And I was like, dude, I could buy like two CDs for that price. It's not worth it.
I mean, like I said, for a new CD, it's quite normal price because new CD is between 15 to 20 bucks or 150 to 200 crowns, however you give or take. But that's the price of the new CD. And strangely enough, also... probably a couple of crowns or buck or two is more expensive to buy a vinyl. Yeah, depends of the vinyl, which band and which album, but...
I think the Def discography, I think it's way cheaper on vinyl than it is on CD.
Yeah, because they reprint it now, I think.
Oh, yeah. I actually remember a friend getting like Leprosy on vinyl, which was a new print. So, yeah.
I mean, I think we are pretty done with this episode.
Yeah, we have more to discuss. So, but I mean, I think we're done for this episode. So we'll be back in 2 weeks again, I guess.
I mean... should we put in a couple of days between because we have a little bit slack in the last week or they gonna wait?
We'll discuss that later after the show, I think. But yeah,
If you don't hear it next week or in a couple of days, yeah, it's going to be after 2 weeks.
I mean, if you guys really want to hear the next episode, then I suggest you fucking mail bomb us or something. I mean, usually, we haven't really received any like letters like, where's the new episode? So, I mean, We're going to release it when we'll release it, but if there's an outcry, a public outcry, that we should, you know, put it out earlier, then of course we can consider that, but yeah.
Well, as usual, check our Facebook at www.facebook.com/mailbrainfart or mailbrainfartpodcast. And if you want to help us to collect death records on the vinyl or CD, you can send it to us, or you can give us some Patreon money on somewhere. The link's down below in the description box. And till next time, stay doomed or be doomed.